lesson 9. We're on the inside. We're looking at the mind of a servant. All right? And what we're doing is jumping over to Acts chapter 20. And before we actually get started in our discussion, I do want to say thank you to Wesley for filling in for me last week. And I appreciate that very much. Okay, let's talk about the mind of a servant. All right? In Acts chapter 20, let me get somebody to read, if you would, verses 17 through 21. Somebody would like to read that for us. Lynette, go ahead. Okay, so Paul here in trying to encourage the elders of Ephesus, the church in Ephesus, goes back and talks about the work that he has been doing. And the thing that I want us to focus on for a few minutes here is the mindset that Paul had and what he expresses to them. Notice in verse 19 that he says, "I served the Lord with great humility and with tears." And so we need to focus just a moment on the word serve. All right? When we think of someone who is a servant, what do we typically think of?
Slave.
A slave? That's actually the word that is used here. Okay? In the Greek language, there are several words, but two primary words that refer or you are translated as servant. Okay? The first one that we've talked about many times before is what? Anybody know? Anybody know what that one is? Diakonos. Okay? Which is where we get the word
deacon.
Okay? And so that's why we often talk about a deacon being a servant. Okay? Because that's one of the main Greek words for servant. All right? But that's not the word that is used here. Okay? The other primary word in the Greek language for servant is doulos, right? And that word literally means a bond servant, okay, or a slave. Now, let me ask you a couple of questions here. Let's talk about what is the difference between a servant and a slave? Okay.
And not they're under duress, but I mean they have the opportunity to leave.
Okay. And so a servant, generally speaking, gets to choose where they're going to work. They get paid for their work. They get to decide what they are and aren't going to do. They generally have terms,
yes.
Right? Of a do what?
It may not be good pay. But
okay.
Pay.
But it's pay. All right. And so. So a lot of the aspect of a servant has to do with the choices that they get to make in terms of what they're going to do, when, and how much they're going to get paid, and all of those kind of things. What about a slave? Yeah. A slave has no choices.
They're owned.
okay? A slave basically is owned by the master and does whatever the master says to do, period. Okay? There's no contract, there's no pay, all right? There's no deciding that, well, here's what I'm willing to do and this is, I'm not willing to do this, so forth. You serve at the will of the master. Okay? And that is the word that Paul uses here. When he talks about serving, he says, I served the Lord. Okay? Then he's saying that he did that as a slave or with the mindset of a slave, someone who is owned by a master. Okay? And so we look at, let's look at a couple of other places here for just a moment. Turn over to Romans chapter 6 for just a minute. And we see more of Paul's mindset in this idea of being a slave, as he says that he was, okay? And we begin to understand it a little bit more clearly. Look beginning in verse 15. Can I get somebody to read verses 15 down through 18? Okay, you have been set free from sin and become doulos to righteousness. Okay, not diakonos, where we get to choose what things we're going to obey and what things we're not. And that's the significant part of it. Isn't that what he's talking about, is obedience here? So we're not, he's not talking about being diakonos, servants, where we get to choose which things we're going to obey and which things we're not. He uses the word doulos to signify a slave who does whatever the master instructs him to do. Okay? So that is Paul's mindset. The mindset of a slave who is living in obedience to the master, who is Christ Jesus. And so if you look, you're looking at this whole aspect of sharing the gospel with people. Look at the questions that are here. Why did Paul use this word in talking about his relationship to Jesus? Was Paul a slave? How did he become a slave? Did Jesus make him, or did he choose it? Let's talk about those questions here a moment, because they all speak to Paul's mindset as to his serving the Lord, as he was speaking to the Ephesian elders. He was a slave by his own declaration, right? Okay? But how did he become a slave is one of the questions here. And not only that, but did Jesus make him become a slave, or did he choose that? How did Paul do it, and thus how do we do that?
Jesus called him personally, but he had the right to decide for himself.
Okay. Okay. All right. He chose it. He was chosen by Christ. He wasn't forced to be a slave. Chuck?
He was struck down and blinded.
Okay.
Which he was, but what he did after that is for the love of Christ.
Right. But the fact that he was struck down and blinded, does that mean he didn't really have a choice in the whole matter? He's, you know, God used that to get his attention, okay? But he still had a choice, right? Okay? So what does that tell us about this mindset of Paul choosing to be a slave? Because most people, okay, when we talk about slavery, if you give them a choice to either be a slave or not be a slave, most people would say, nope, not going to be a slave. Right? Okay? Now, there were provisions under the old law for someone to remain a slave if their master was prepared to free them. Were there not? Yeah, the old law required that if someone served out their time, the master was going to free them, and they didn't want to be freed, that they could take an awl and nail their ear to the door, and that meant that what was going to happen? They would be a slave of that master. How long? For life. So there are those occasions when someone would choose to remain a slave, but generally speaking, people don't, given the option, they don't choose to be a slave. And that's one of the major differences that we have concerning this kind of slavery versus what we typically think of as slavery, in that we do have a choice, but what is Paul saying here about the choice? Do we really have a choice as to whether or not we're going to be a slave? Do what?
But he also talks about being a slave to sin.
Exactly. So what is he really saying? The issue is you are a slave to someone, right? You're a slave. Okay? So the choice that we make is who we're going to be a slave to. Who is our master going to be? That's the real choice that we get. If we don't choose to be a servant or a slave of Christ, then by default, we are a slave of sin. Okay? And so, choosing to be a slave of Christ, okay, is not a passive thing. It is an active choice that we have to make. Right? And it is a choice that we can make. We're allowed to make. In other words, we don't have to remain a slave to sin. Okay? Brian, you had your hand up a moment ago? Oh, okay. And one of the things that we see Paul doing a lot, and with this passage, he talks about this whole idea of being a slave one to the other. That's a message that we need to help people to understand. Okay? We talk a lot about, you know, giving your life to Christ, and you need to be baptized into Christ, you need to be saved, and so forth. But how often do we actually talk to people about the fact that, look, do you realize you are a slave? Okay? You are a slave. Right? And you are a slave. You will always be a slave to one or the other. Okay? And if you don't choose Jesus, then you will be a slave to sin. And that's an important message that we need to help people understand. Because too many people, I think, are still trying to be this, you know, worldly Christian where I get to, yeah, I believe in Jesus, and so, yeah, he's my Lord, he's my master, blah, blah, blah. But yet they are still living as a slave to sin because they haven't really chosen, made a decision to to be free from sin and to be a slave to Christ. When we talk about that whole concept of slavery, that's a negative connotation that people don't like today. Right? But it is one in which that we need to help people to understand. You are a slave to something. Okay? You just need to make a choice who you're going to be a slave. Who's going to be your master? Denise?
It's not a novel concept because we're told that we can't serve God and mammon.
Right.
And back in, Joshua, he said, you can choose.
Mm-hmm.
To
choose
serve
you
God
this day.
Your
right.
Or you could choose. So we're going, there's going to be something that's the center of our life that we focus
right.
on. That it's just human nature.
Right.
And it's either going to be the world or God, or we might try a combination of something to work, but.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't do both. But the most important thing is we've got to help people understand they need to make a choice. They need to make an active choice to choose to be a slave of Jesus. Because if you don't, as I said a moment ago, then passively you have chosen to be a slave of sin. Okay? So the next question on here. If we are servants or slaves of Jesus, do we have a right to do our own will? Why or why not? I like the why or why not part because the first part is easy, right? We go, nope. But why or why not? Ray?
No man can say two masters.
Okay. Okay. All right.
But God has already made it plain. We have to save Him if we're going to please Him.
Okay. All right.
We can't please Him and save the devil.
Okay. All right. Chuck?
We don't have a right. But then I remember, and we all struggle, is when Paul says, why do I do what I don't want to do?
Right.
And do, or, I don't know if I'm getting that mixed up, but it's so much, it's a mindset. But when you say, I have a right to do my will, then you are totally in rebellion. But we're going to mess up. We're going to displease the Lord. But our mind is, we don't have a choice. We know it. He knew it. He's like, why do I do when I'm not supposed
right.
to do it? Why do I do this? You know, but praise Jesus Christ that he saved him from that. He yeah. saved us from that. Because
yeah.
his mindset is, I'm a servant, even though I'm messing up, that mindset is always there.
Okay.
To get you back to the master. Who
right.
which you are dependent upon.
Yeah. And, you know, there is that aspect of certainly grace and everything else involved. We're not going to do it perfectly. But the concept of slavery is one that we need to understand is that we serve a master, and because we serve a master, we do not have a choice in terms of, you know, picking and choosing what we're going to do. The master tells us to do this, and we go, I'm not feeling that today. You know, that we as slaves, and that's the mind frame, the mindset we need to understand ourselves in that context. Not just of being a servant where, yeah, we don't like what, he's telling me I need to do this, but I don't really like that. I'm not comfortable with it, so I'm just going to skip that part. Say, slaves don't get to do that. Slaves do what they are told to do. All right? And so when that comes to how we are living out our life and how we are living in the church, those are important things, and especially as we're trying to teach people about the Lord and helping people to be saved, that we need to teach that concept. One of the biggest hurdles and obstacles that we face is trying to teach people who are lost in denominationalism. They're just kind of caught up in religion and doing whatever they want to do to understand the concept that, no, Jesus is Lord of the church. Okay? He's the master of the church. And he gets to decide what we're supposed to do and what we're not. And for us to say, well, yeah, I don't agree with him on this. You see? And to make up our own rules and to do church the way we want to do it. And I'm not talking about just the whole aspect of, you know, five acts of worship. I'm just talking about just the doctrines, the practices, the whole atmosphere of the church. You know, one of the biggest problems that we have going on in Christianity today, and I'm going to use that term very loosely, is we have a lot of servants in the church, but we don't have a lot of slaves. Okay? And servants are out here in all kinds of churches that are saying, just take one topic, homosexuality. It's okay.
Even the Pope said that.
Yeah, even the Pope came out. The leader of the Catholic Church came out and said, it's okay. Well, excuse me, but the Pope did not die for the church. He doesn't get to decide. Jesus already decided those things. And so, you know, all of this aspect of people out here deciding, that's just one issue. Okay? There's a whole bunch of them out there, but that's a huge one right now that is affecting churches. Okay? And so, you know, again, we've got to help people to understand our role as slaves, and that's what we are. We need to help people understand that. We don't get to tell God what we're going to do and not going to do. Ours is to do what he has told us to do. You see? Chuck, do you have a comment? And he hasn't changed his mind not one bit.
No, there's no rewrite on the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. Kathy?
I'm reminded also that Jesus himself was asking God, let this cup pass me. It is our choice to choose Jesus. Once you have, and just like the Lord struggled with that too, his will would ultimately follow God and his rule. And it's his blood that keeps us clean. And we, as his slaves, are bought and paid for.
That's right.
For us to have, like you said, that mindset, he didn't owe us anything. We owe him everything.
That's right. Exactly. Okay, turn over to Philippians chapter 2 a minute. Look at this next section, the mind of submission. Okay, so we look at this mindset of being a bondservant, not a diakonos, a servant, but a doulos, a bond servant, or a slave, okay? And in Philippians chapter 2, look at what he says here, beginning in verse 3. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, a doulos, and being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. All right, so when we look at what Paul's saying here and looking at his mindset and this mindset that says submission, which is another really bad word in our culture and society today, isn't it? Okay, that word submission just sends people going, wait a minute, I'm not submitting to anybody. You see? Because when people today talk about submitting, what usually is the concept that comes to mind? Do what? A wife to their husband, but what? Why is that so objectionable to people? It's like a slave,
they're
but
control. You're out of control. You're giving control to someone else.
Yeah,
it's
a lesser person.
Yeah, it's like I'm a second class citizen. You know, I'm not as important as, you know, someone else. We get that from in the business world a lot. You know, we're supposed to submit to, you know, the boss, right? Because he or she is the boss, and we got to do what the boss says if we want to keep our job. And because the boss is more, help me out, important, right? You see? They've got more power and all that kind of thing. So that whole concept of submitting, that's like I said, it's a bad word for people today. But yet it's the word that Paul uses here to describe who?
Christ.
Yeah, to describe Christ. Okay? And so when he says, and here's, let's look at these couple of questions here. What does it mean to count others better than yourself? What does that mean in the context of what Paul is talking about here? He says, in humility, consider others better than yourself. Okay? Okay? All right? Which is usually the opposite of what people want to do today, isn't it? You know, we typically, you know, our concept is, you know, I'm number one, right? I want to be top dog. I want to be, you know, and so this idea of basically is turning that upside down. Okay? How can we do that in a practical way? What does that look like, in other words? To consider others better than yourself. Is this talking about better in quality?
No.
Okay, what is it talking about here?
Prioritizing.
Okay.
Their needs above your own.
Yes.
When somebody has a need, and you either use your time or your money that you had planned to spend doing something else to instead
okay.
now help that person.
All right, okay. Okay, yeah. It's not talking about the quality in the sense that you are a better person than I am or something of that nature. Okay, it is talking basically about putting other people before ourselves. All right? Here's one of those personal questions that he has on here. How would I act if I counted others more important than myself? What would that look like? Wes? Okay.
And you see someone in distress or someone call you on the phone or someone at the door asking for help. But you tell them, I'm not kind of, I'm not all you care.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're supposed to be a servant, you're supposed to be serving God, but you don't have to have enough for that because you don't really care.
Yeah. Right. And we can very easily lose sight of that us in serving that person, we're actually serving God, right?
Right.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
You know value by it too.
Okay.
You can do that. You do it from God, doing it for the right.
Right. Exactly.
And you do it so you can come and get your boast about what you did and things that's not
right. Right. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm late because I had to stop and help all these people and, you know, whatever the case may be, you know. Okay, good. What else? Chuck, did I see your hand up a moment ago? Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's where he wants you to be serving right now. Okay, Chuck?
Serving is sacrifice.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And our love is our sacrifice of ourselves, our living sacrifice of ourselves, to love others and put them above ourselves.
Okay.
It wasn't just the sacrifice on the cross in that same passage. It says, who being in his very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing. In other words, he could have held on to that and just sat up there and been God, but our needs were more important.
Exactly.
His needs, and so he let go, and he made himself into, by appearance of a man, and lived as we lived, and suffered humiliations, and defeats, and harsh words, and rejection, and
yeah.
All these things that we face because that was important for us.
Yeah.
It wasn't what was best for him, but it was what was best for us.
Exactly. Okay. Brian?
I was going to say, he set the standard a lot of us don't want to follow.
Okay.
Because he said that he gave everything. We're willing to help others to the point that doesn't really hurt us, and that we'll do something for them to make ourselves feel good about it, but we truly are not sacrificing ourselves for others.
Okay.
Christ has set the standard that a lot of us don't want to really hold ourselves to.
Okay. Which takes us basically back to the whole difference between being a servant and a slave. We're willing to be servants if we get to choose where and when and how and all that, but that whole slave thing, that's a tough nut to crack, isn't it? Denise?
You know, another way that our relationship is described a lot in the Bible is marriage.
Okay.
And what do you tell people when they say that marriage is 50-50? What do you always tell them? It's not.
It's 100 and 100. That's right.
And 100. And he's given 100, and so we're expected to give 100 back.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is sometimes we want to treat it more like dating, because when you're dating, you're perfectly free to go date other people.
Yeah.
You're just kind of dipping your toe in at that point.
Yeah.
But when you're married, that's it. There is no open marriage here.
That's right.
And we're expected to give 100%.
Exactly. And we recognize, you know, who it is that we are married to, and willing to serve him in that way. Absolutely. Absolutely. So what would I act, or how would I act if I looked to the things of others and not to my own things? Be specific, it says here. How would I act if I looked to the things of others and not to my own things? I'm sorry? What? It's more, in other words, what would that look like? If I were really looking to the things of others, the needs of others, rather than to myself, what would that actually look like? In a practical way. Give me some examples.
Well, somebody calls me up and they have a need, and so I drop what I'm doing and I take care of that need.
Okay, all right.
How important what I was doing was to me.
Okay.
What they need is more important, so I'm going to just drop it, I'm going to go over to their house and, you know, fix or, you know, whatever it is to
Okay? What else would it look like?
I'm thinking that would be a constant action on your part, that you're keeping your eye out on others, that you will see that they might be in need. I'm just giving you an example because my dad was like that. He always seemed to know what everybody needs because he was always listening. He was attentive to other people. For example, he saw someone struggling and needed a chair. He had a chair.
Okay, all right. Amy?
There was an example of there was this little boy walking down the street outside of our house, and there was some other older kids following him, and he was crying. And we were in our driveway, and we stopped him, and we said, "Hey, are you okay?" And he said, "No." And we asked him where he lived, and he said it was a little ways away. And we're like, "Well, can we give you a ride home?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Do you know where you live?" And he said, "I don't know the address." And I said, "Can you show me?" And he said, "Yeah." So I was just observing.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Let me put a little twist into this for you. Okay. How would that look when it comes to evangelism or sharing the gospel with other people? And that's really the focus of our study. So how would that look in that context? Okay. In other words, how would I act? And when I say I'm not talking about me personally. I'm talking about each one of us need to be asking that question of ourselves, all right? If I looked to the things of others, okay, and the things of others, specifically the gospel, the need to be saved, okay, and not my own things, how would that look?
That would be putting away any feelings of embarrassment.
Okay. Okay.
Turn down or whatever.
All right. What else? Okay. What else? What would it look like for you? What would you have to do? That's what I want you to be thinking about. Okay? To look to the things of others. And we've been talking about for the last 2 years, our emphasis has been on the things of others has to do with saving souls. People are lost. Okay?
Sometimes it might look like instead of just waiting for people to ask us questions, it might mean talking to people and probing a little bit and finding out where they are spiritually.
Okay.
Willing to engage with people. So many times it's, "Hi, how are you this morning?" And
their need is, right. And be a neighbor to those in our Jerusalem, right? Yeah, and that's really what it's about. Okay, we're out of time. Let me get you to think about this last question at the bottom of the page there, and we can kind of talk about some of that next week as we continue on. If other people are more important to me than myself, will I let fear stop me from talking to them about Jesus? Will I let anything stop me? And what are some of the things that might stop us from talking to others about Jesus? I want you just to think about that. And just in the context of what Paul says here in Philippians chapter 2, making others more important than myself, what am I willing to let go of and to sacrifice and all that to be able to share the gospel with other people? All right? Kathy. Great. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thank you all very much.